And 500 episodes later, we are here. Welcome to the Wildcast podcast. I'm Arizona Daily Star's Justin Spears, here with Micah Lev and former sports editor Ryan Finley, a guy who hired both Lev and myself. He is now the sports editor at the San Diego Union Tribune, been there now for a couple of years. Ryan, it's good to see you.
Thank you. Yeah, I've been at the Union Tribune. I tried to figure this out. I think my last day at the Star was like 2 years ago next week.
Wow.
It's flown by. It's funny. It feels like yesterday. When you said that this was the 500th episode of the podcast, somewhat blown away. I can remember doing the first one. I believe it was in my car. Or doing a test show in my car, kind of as a proof of concept. And thank you, as I'm not now a listener. Thank you for keeping it going these last couple of years. It's been great to listen to.
It took us 500 episodes to have a guest. I feel like you might be the first guest that we've ever had on the pod. But thank you for joining us, Ryan. You are, of course, also a U of A alum. Mm-hmm. So you are well qualified to talk about all things U of A athletics, and we'll get into all of that later. But I remember doing a test pod with Zach Rosenblatt and Dom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That I don't think ever ran, but I think we did some sort of like, I remember doing like a hot take. It's like a Sonoran Desert hot take kind of thing. And if I'm recalling correctly, my prediction at that time was that Khalil Tate would take over as the starting quarterback, like sooner than later for Arizona. Now, I can't remember if that was 2016 or 2017 when we did that, but it was sort of true, I guess. So I'm sitting here taking credit for a take on a podcast that never aired.
It's impossible to prove you wrong.
That's exactly right. Yes. Yeah.
Well, the podcast started in 2017.
Okay.
Because that was probably it then. So when I was first hired by the Arizona Daily Star, that was 2017. And during that time, I think already you guys had released like two or three episodes by the time that I was hired. And the conversations at that time were about the quarterback battle between Brandon Dawkins and Khalil Tate, which was won by Brandon Dawkins. And then Khalil Tate, on a cold night in Boulder, Colorado, decided to set a FBS record for rushing yards in a single game by a quarterback. But yeah, when the podcast first started, 2017, the FBI had not investigated Arizona basketball yet. That whole scandal, which was a complete mess. Arizona football had Rich Rodriguez as a head coach. Brandon Dawkins was the starting quarterback. What else was going on at that time, Ryan?
Oh, man. It was there was lots going on. I recall when we talk about these early episodes of the podcast, maybe one of the few times you and I have ever disagreed was before the 2018 NBA draft, and we were talking about who you'd rather take number one overall. And I seem to remember I decided that I was going to die on the hill of Luka Doncic is better than DeAndre Ayton.
Man.
And I got murdered for it on this podcast. I think there were three or four of us talking. Lev, you may have been there. I think Dominic Pachaco, our former colleague, may have been on there too. And I just remember catching it from about three sides because I'm like, well, what if Doncic is really good? And not to give anything away, but my children are receiving NBA basketball jerseys this year for Christmas. They're receiving jerseys of one of the guys, one of those two, not DeAndre Ayton, not a Portland Trailblazers DeAndre Ayton jersey for my guys.
The bigger question in that draft is, do the Atlanta Hawks regret what they did?
That's a great point.
Because they took Trae Young. They may have even traded up for Trae Young, who's a very good player and might be playing the best ball of his career right now, but he's not Luka.
Right. A shoot first, high volume guy. Well, I guess we can talk about that when we talk about Arizona basketball here a little bit.
He was supposed to be the next Hakeem Olajuwon, Ryan. I remember that's what I said. I'm like, he's Aiden. Built. Yeah. I'm like, look the way he's built. Look at the way he plays. Like, this guy is going to be it. He's like the next Dwight Howard.
Pat Forty, who I don't think is wrong often when it comes to evaluating players, said that the only comparison for DeAndre Ayton coming out of college was Wilt Chamberlain.
Yeah. Good Lord.
I know. But again, to quote, what is it, Dennis Green? You know, this is why you play the games, right? It's to, you know, see who's good and who isn't. And, you know, not that DeAndre Ayton's bad. He's a max contract NBA guy. But he's not Wilt Chamberlain, I don't think, at this point.
No, he's already on his second franchise. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I thought that DeAndre Ayton could do, but super valuable in the NBA, is defend perimeter players.
Yes.
Because, yeah, you know, they're always trying to switch on these screen and rolls and get these matchups, right? With like some sort of slasher wing player against a big. And I'm like, this, I saw him do it at Arizona. Like, he's got the foot speed, the agility to switch and cover these types of guys. But I don't know. It's more of, to me, with him, like an internal fire situation or lack thereof. Mm-hmm. You know, like, does he really want to be great?
Well, and big men,
it takes that.
And we're going out in the left field, and then we will come back and talk about the Wildcast.
Sure.
The Wildcast podcast. But big men, I think, are sort of inherently not likable. I think the reason, you know, my kids at home love Steph Curry is because Steph Curry is sort of average sized. You know, there's not, I think it's hard to sort of see a 7-footer as an underdog, or as, you know, particularly even likable. You know, somebody like Shaq is an anomaly, right? Shaq, you know, name a center that everybody loves ever outside of Shaq. Not very many of them. You know, Kareem was a polarizing player. Chamberlain could be a polarizing guy. In a way, DeAndre Ayton had a lot of that kind of working against him to begin with. But, you know, that's the problem with hype, right? He was the number one player in America. He comes to Arizona and almost immediately gets caught in the middle of this FBI scandal, gets taken number one overall. I think that he will be a perfectly fine long-term NBA player. But man, it's hard to live up to those expectations, isn't it?
Yeah. We were talking about this guy being a first ballot Hall of Famer, like one of the best centers in all of basketball, and just kind of turned out to be just a guy. Like, I'd still say he, in terms of big men, like guys that you want playing center for your team, he's still a top 6 big man in NBA, top 8.
Okay.
I would say.
It's just that position, it's sort of, it's not a perfect comparison, but it's sort of like running back in the NFL in a way. It's been devalued to a certain degree. Like, you have to be able to shoot from outside now if you're a center. That is certainly not DeAndre Ayton's game. Like, the embodiment of the modern center in a way is Brooke Lopez, who doesn't even rebound that much, but he blocks shots and he makes threes. I know this is fantasy basketball.
And he's my age. He is my age guy. You know, that's what's so amazing. And, you know, it's funny. We talk about the evolution of the modern center. Look no further than Arizona, right? Where even in the last, say, 3 years, you know, they went from a guy in Umar Ballo, who is a shot blocking, dunking, old school center, and then kind of decided to move on from him in favor of guys who are shooting threes in the final minutes of close games. It's a different world now. You know, the European influence, you know, kind of across the board is, you know, it's everywhere in the NBA. You got to be able to shoot. And, you know, DeAndre Ayton was not much of a shooter. And, you know, who was? Dušan Ristić. That guy could shoot a little. He'd step back every once in a while.
Where do you rank? Oh,
yes.
Oh, that was what I did on the video. Dušan Ristić is like celebration.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little bit like Vlade Divac when you do that, right? Anyway, yeah.
Where does Dušan rank in terms of just popularity of Arizona basketball players over the last decade?
Well, so if the standard is T.J. McConnell. Right. If TJ McConnell is 10 on our list of likability, right? I don't know. What do you think? 7?
Yeah.
8? Something like that.
On a scale of Alonzo Trier to TJ McConnell.
To TJ McConnell. I would say that he's somewhere like maybe a little bit below Rondae Hollis Jefferson, who will always be one of my favorite Arizona players of all time because he got one of Kelly Presnell's photos tattooed up and down his back.
Remember that's that? Right. Yeah.
Our super talented, my former colleague, your current colleague, Kelly Presnell, great photographer. He'll always be right there. But yeah, Dusan Ristich, very popular guy, even now. You know, if he's back at McHale, he'll get a standing ovation for sure.
Absolutely.
TJ McConnell is coming back to McHale. We're recording this on Tuesday, and he will be there on Wednesday to be inducted into the Ring of Honor. Any TJ McConnell stories from your time around the program, Ryan?
Not a ton. I covered basketball more so than football. I remember seeing him, though, and, you know, you talk about expectations and first impressions, right? When I saw DeAndre Ayton, I've never seen a guy that tall who moves that well. Sitting in the stands, you'd think he was 6'6 or 6'7, the way he moved, but he's 7 feet tall, right? TJ McConnell, the first time I saw him, the first thing that went through my head is practice player, small conference guy. You know, well, I bet you were good at Duquesne, but this ain't Duquesne. Welcome to the Pac-12.
Yeah.
And he blew away every expectation. He was tough. A coach on the court. My guess is, and I never watched Sean Miller play as a player, but my guess is Sean Miller saw a lot of himself in TJ McConnell. I guess my lasting image of him, and like it is for you guys, is probably him getting down on his hands and knees and kissing the center court logo on senior day. And I think that remains for me one of my most memorable Arizona sports moments and one of my most memorable Arizona Daily Star sports sections. The next day we had that thing, a photo this big of McConnell sort of kissing the floor. Just likable guy. And again, so surprising, right? This is why we like sports. All the five-star guys that Sean Miller brought in and all of the super highly touted guys that have played at Arizona over the years. And the one that I'm sure most people love more than them all is the little transfer from Duquesne who has turned himself into a fine, very fine pro and a very rich man playing in the NBA.
So we were talking about Khalil Tate and Brandon Dawkins. And of course, Rich Rodriguez was the coach at that time. We had no idea before the 2017 season that it would be his last season as Arizona's head coach. He was fired at the end of that year. Mm-hmm. And here we are, 7 years later, mm-hmm. and Rich Rodriguez is back.
Yeah. Take him home.
Back. He's in the Big 12. He's back at West Virginia, his alma mater, his home state. I think we all would agree that this is a great fit and perfect timing all around.
Yeah. Enough time has elapsed. Yes. Yeah. He's sort of paid his penance a little bit. Not that coaching Jacksonville State in Alabama and not Jacksonville is penance necessarily. It's not a punishment, but he proved. I mean, he went to the lowest levels of Division I college football and won. And, won a bowl game last year, got off to a brutal start this year, and then caught fire and did it playing the way they've always played. I think it's a great hire for them. I don't know that I necessarily would have hired him back at Arizona. But I think Rich Rodriguez and West Virginia are a really good fit. And, I hope for their sake that this time around they have their eyes wide open about the fishbowl that's Morgantown. Rita Rodriguez told me once that, that there was no winning, that she would go to the grocery store. And if she paid with a credit card, she worried that somebody would, memorize the credit card number. And if she paid with a wad of cash, they'd be judged for paying in wads of cash. And, there was a time, especially when they were losing or when they just weren't doing as well, that everything not only Rich did, but his family did was under some real scrutiny. The flip side is he played golf with the governor and was the most well-known human being in his home state. That's a pretty good legacy. If you can go back there and be, the most famous man in the state of West Virginia, it's a pretty big deal.
He also, this time around, has the Pat McAfee PR machine on his side, which I think is mm-hmm. helpful.
Mm-hmm.
But the interesting thing about this whole situation to me is expectations, which flavor a lot of how we view sports mm-hmm. teams, coaches, players, their performances. If the expectations at West Virginia are that he's going to almost instantly return them to where they were when he mm-hmm. left, you're probably going to be disappointed.
Right. Because
they were a top 10 team like 3 years in a row at the end of mm-hmm. his time there.
Right.
If your expectations are, hey, let's go 7-5, 8-4 every year. And then every once in a while, every 4 or 5 years, we'll win 10 games and be in the Big 12 championship game. Mm-hmm. Then I think, you know, I think those are reason. That is a reasonable set of expectations for what Rich Rod could do there.
Well, let's talk about expectations. Andy Lopez, who you and who all three of us know pretty well.
Yeah.
Used to use the phrase expectations will kill you. Okay. We saw this year with Arizona's football team that when you expect great things and bad things happen, people lose it. And people lose jobs, frankly, you know, and the expectation at Arizona, I think most years has been let's go to a bowl game, right? And the bowl game is always sort of capped out at something reasonable, you know, not to be a San Diego honk now that I live here, but you know, the Holiday Bowl was always a really good destination. That was a sign that your season was a success. This year, they aimed higher. There was an expectation that they were going to be among the best teams in a really good football conference, and that didn't happen. You guys are there, and I'm not. How much do we think expectations flavored sort of the way Arizona fans felt about the 2024 season?
Oh, it's totally how they felt. How they feel about the Arizona football season and how much of a colossal disappointment it was. Mm-hmm. And like, you're seeing all these players entering the transfer portal now. Mm-hmm. And I bet you Brent Brennan would love for that to happen last year. So that way the expectations aren't as high, but mm-hmm. you had the best wide receiver in college football, a Biletnikoff award winner and a bona fide top 10 pick in Tetaroa McMillan coming back. You had Noah Fafita, who showed that he is a very promising quarterback, a little bit undersized, but man, he can fling it. Really good leader, really good quarterback to have on your team. And then when you couple that with guys like Jacob Manu, mm-hmm. who led the Pac-12 in tackles, and then all these defensive backs that are really good, like you felt like the core was there, like the mm-hmm. nucleus was there, mm-hmm. and they had a bunch of offensive linemen coming back too. And then from that moment on, when they mm-hmm. made that announcement at McHale Center during the Arizona-UCLA basketball game. Mm-hmm. It was like every little bit, as the season got closer and closer, something happened. And then after the season started, injuries started to pile up, and it wasn't the roster that we thought it was going to be. Like, no one predicted Raymond Polito to walk away from the team. Mm-hmm. No one predicted Leif Magnusson to deal with really bad concussions that would sideline him for the rest of the year. And no one thought that the left tackle succeeding Jordan Morgan would get a season-ending leg injury. No one thought that the running back that transferred in for New Mexico, that was a highly touted recruit, would be dealing with eligibility concerns. So it was like injuries and all these other things really showed that Arizona's roster, like mm-hmm. 21 through 85, mm-hmm. had really no depth whatsoever.
And the problem
and that was the issue is that we – and I take – blame too, Ryan. Mm-hmm. I didn't emphasize how big Jordan Morgan and Jacob Cowling and Tanner McLaughlin, all those other guys would be.
Right.
Losing those guys really hurt Arizona. And you saw Noah Fafita struggle this year when he didn't have a reliable tight end and a second option at wide receiver.
No, that's a great point. And well, and I think too, we talk about expectations. The two big names on the team, right? Fafita and McMillan. We're healthy all year, or we're, at least we're able to play in all games all year. And so I think that your average fan, maybe not somebody who is a daily reader of the Star or of your guys's work, but maybe your average fan goes, I don't know why they're so bad. They have the star quarterback and the star receiver. Well, yeah. And then the 5th through 10th players are all hurt, right? 10th best players are all hurt. You know, nobody likes to talk about offensive linemen. You know, they don't catch touchdown passes. They don't.
They had 7 different starting offensive lines this year.
That's exactly where I was headed. You know, Justin, you played a little O-line in your day. You know, nobody talks about
this,
offensive
line. This never comes up on the podcast.
No.
Justin playing offensive line. I think every other episode we mentioned this. But
it's not like there's a framed jersey over his shoulder or anything. but, you know, it's your average fan couldn't tell you who the starting center is on their favorite football team. They can't. But when those guys get hurt, man, you know, it becomes apparent how important the offensive line is in tackling. You know, I only watched on TV, but I watched most of their games on TV. I've seen a lot of bad Arizona football, and this was as bad a tackling team as I can recall seeing. And some of that had to have been guys playing before they were supposed to, injury replacements, and some of that's execution too. It's just strange when you start with those high expectations. You know, I was a sophomore in college in 1999 when they opened up at Penn State, and you could track the fall of Arizona's football program to that morning, right? 9 a.m. Tucson time. They lose at Penn State, 41-7, I believe it was. They get blown out. You know, they're just mediocre the rest of the year. They're mediocre the next year. Dictomi gets fired. And then, you know, it's 12 years in the desert, right? I mean, it's waiting to rebuild the whole thing. What I hope is that what happened this year isn't the start of sort of a crumbling of what they've built over the last 15 years under, you know, Mike Stoops, Rich Rodriguez, and then after Kevin Sumlin, Jed Fish.
Yeah, it would have been better in retrospect for Brent Brennan if he had gotten to Arizona a week later and all the good players had left.
Yeah.
Because then expectations would have been super low. Right. But you know, he played a role in this, but you know, they did a good job of keeping the core together, including those headliners. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they kind of flopped as a coaching staff, especially on the offensive side of the ball. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, hiring Dino Babers to be the OC in retrospect with the value, with the benefit of hindsight, was a mistake. And if they had been better on offense, even just average on offense, they probably could have gotten to six wins and the narrative and the conversations would be a little bit different. Mm-hmm. The one thing I'll say though about like program building in today's day and age is you can do it a lot easier and faster. Like you can engineer a turnaround via the transfer portal in ways that you couldn't back in 2018 or 19. I can't remember exactly when the portal launched. Might have been right around that time, maybe a year or two later. But you could see like complete roster transformations. I mean, look at ASU. I mean, how many of their starting 22 were homegrown players? I don't have that number in front of me, but I'm guessing that a lot of those guys were transfers. I mean, we know that Cam Scadaboo was a transfer. Jordan Tyson was a transfer. Mm-hmm. Sam Levitt was a transfer, on and on. But you have to, you know, you have to be good at evaluating players and you have to offer them something that lures them to your program. I don't think Arizona can compete with some others in terms of the financial package that they can offer, but I tell you what they can offer right now at a lot of positions, and that is playing time.
Opportunity.
That is always and forever the number one incentive for someone to switch programs.
Okay. Can I ask you guys a question? Oh, Justin, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you know, when you guys were talking about it's easier to build rosters, and then Ryan said, yeah, with money. And, you know, you're going to have like these teams, like for instance, a team like Texas, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure Johnny Nansen's like, yeah, we can get a guy like Takaro Davis to come in. And we can give him a check that Arizona just can't compete with whatsoever. Is Arizona going to do the same, but to group of five schools? Like you look at the four players that they have right now. Yeah, they got a guy from Texas, but he originally came from Cal Poly and San Jose State. And he's a guy that's looking for opportunity, right? But is Arizona going to pretty much do, I mean, like what Texas and all these other schools are doing to these other programs? Is this just like a chain effect and Arizona is going to pretty much big brother some of these group of five schools?
I mean, the football program that we cover here in San Diego, San Diego State, is learning that the hard way right now. You know, they gave their starting quarterback job this year to a true freshman, guy who enrolled early, this kid, Danny O'Neill. He announces last week that he wants to transfer closer to home. He's from the Midwest. And then yesterday signed with Wisconsin, right? This is San Diego State brought in six new transfers today. Most of them are small college guys, like small college guys. And then we've got guys like the Arizona receiver, who we were talking about beforehand.
Malachi Riley.
You know, then they bring in some guys who are looking for opportunity, right? It's a pyramid, man. It's, you know, the guys at the top pick from the guys below them. And very rarely do you see players sort of go the other way. So maybe it's a funnel, whatever it is. It's either a pyramid or a funnel. Yeah, you know, good Mountain West players. Arizona should go get good Mountain West players every year. The flip side is Arizona is going to lose good players every year to schools like Texas.
Right? And from a fan's perspective, and I've already seen it, they're like, who are these players? Like, why is Arizona going after the Mountain West guys? And I'm like, this is so kind of what they can afford right now.
Mike Stoops. You know, it's funny, as you get older, stuff that sounded silly when you were younger makes a lot of sense. When I started covering Mike Stoops, I was something like 25 years old. So a young guy. He used to say, in recruiting, you get who you're supposed to get. And I always thought that that was a cop-out, that that was what a guy who didn't want to swim with the Sharks said, right? But he was brilliant. I mean, a school like Arizona is going to get the kinds of guys that a school like Arizona always gets, you know?
Rob Gronkowski.
Gronk and T-Mac are the two exceptions that I can think of in 25 years of following Arizona football, right?
Yep.
You know, everybody loves Fifita. Fifita's awesome. Arizona was the best school to offer Noah Fifita, right? This is, you know, Arizona gets who they're supposed to get. And Brent Brennan's job is to win with, you know, three-star guys and four-star guys and JUCO guys and bounce-back guys. You know, they're never going to be USC. In much the same way, Arizona is sort of that titan in basketball, right? Arizona's going to get five-star guys every year in basketball. They just are. You know, at some point, you get who you're supposed to get. And we talk about expectations. If you're going to sit around waiting for Arizona to sign a five-star quarterback who picks them over Alabama, you're going to be waiting around a long time, because that's never happened before. You know,
we did a podcast, Justin, myself, and Alec White, the day after USC and UCLA left.
I know where you're going.
Or announced that they were leaving the Pac-12 for the Big Ten. Okay, and the premise of this episode, maybe the most infamous episode of our 500, Justin's cracking up over there.
Was Alec White still with us then?
He was, not from very much longer, but he was. He's now working for the Buffalo Bills in the snow, doing great. But so the premise of it was, on a scale of 1 to 10, like, how do programs see themselves versus what are they actually, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, a 10 is the best and one is the least. And I don't remember what the exact numbers were that we came up with for Arizona, but in football, I feel like maybe fans see them as an 8. They're maybe more like a 5 or 6.
Okay.
So I think that kind of speaks to what you're talking about in a way. You know, and there is sort of a feeder system that's kind of evolved in the college athletic space, you know, roster limits are actually probably going to help that because you can't hoard, you're not going to be able to hoard players to the same degree that you have been able to. They're going to go down to 105 and you were able to carry 120. Mm-hmm. So the 106th player on the Ohio State roster might be a starter at Nevada, know? So I think that'll help. It's really going to help in baseball. I was just talking about this with some colleagues of mine, the roster limit of 34 players, which might be a little too small, honestly. Hard to do intra-squad scrimmages with that number of players without having guys, you know, hey, you know, relief pitcher, go play in the outfield or whatever. But it'll help the smaller schools because like LSU in baseball will not be able to hoard all of the good guys. And so there will be something of a trickle down effect that happens when those rosters shrink a little bit.
Right. Well, and maybe I'm speaking, or I'm thinking with my heart here. I can't imagine that this is going to be the way college sports are going to be 5 years from now, 10 years from now. You know, I think once we get into revenue sharing a little bit at some schools, I think that roster limits, to me, this world we're in now where it is the Wild West. Right. There's really no limits on how much money you can give a guy. There's no limits. You know, NIL was turned into an inducement 5 seconds after it was approved. Right. That was never the intent of the rule. People are essentially flipping the bird to the NCAA and saying, come get us. Come get us. Yeah. You think we're cheating? Come get us. And the NCAA is toothless. This world that we're in right now, I don't see it as being sustainable. And frankly, even the very rich even the very accomplished schools, I think people there are miserable. You know, Nick Saban left Alabama because he didn't want to deal with it, right? And Nick Saban's at friggin' Alabama. What happens when you're the head coach at Arizona, San Diego State, Nevada, you know, fill in the blank, right? UTEP. You know, nobody wants the system that we have in place right now to continue. With the exception of Ohio State, I can't imagine anybody actually enjoying this.
Interesting. We don't know what this world is going to look like 5 years from now. It definitely feels like there is a need for some more structure than what we have now. I haven't written this piece yet, but later in the week, I'm going to write something about the transfer portal. And like, there's kind of like this rush, right? Like, oh my, like it's similar to recruiting. Someone's visiting, someone's committing, like, oh, it's exciting. It's fun. It's sad when players that you've come to know and love leave in the portal for their final season to go somewhere else. But the fact that you can do it over and over and over again, and we're seeing guys transfer 2, 3, and even 4 times. I mean, is that really good for them?
Right.
Like, is that good for their education? Is that good for their mental well-being to be like moving all over the country, like not planting roots anywhere, not really having like an attachment to a certain school? Like, we talked about TJ McConnell earlier, and he obviously was a transfer, transferred one time. And then had, how many years did he play here? 2 years, maybe 3, whatever it was. It wasn't like he went somewhere else at the end, you know, like Arizona fans can like, he's their guy,
right?
You know? And I think there's some value to that. That's been lost. And it's also like, look, I don't have a lot of sympathy for college football head coaches in general, because they will always take the next best opportunity. Most of them anyway. We'll take the next best opportunity that comes up. But it is really hard to do your job when you're trying to prepare for a bowl game and 20 of your players have gone into the portal. Like Penn State, I don't know if you saw James Franklin's comments about their backup quarterback, but he was like, he didn't want to leave. Like, he wants to be with us, but he felt like he had no choice because of there's only so many quarterback jobs out there and the timing of everything. This is what we're talking about. Penn State is a team that could win the national championship. This is a quarterback who played meaningful snaps for them this year. To not have that guy available. Now, I've seen also people are like, oh, look at what Kenny Dillingham said. Like, his approach is the best. Like, go ahead in the portal, but stay with us. Are those players going to be in the right frame of mind? Committed to Arizona State while also looking around at other opportunities? And are they going to kind of get the side eye from their teammates who did not go in the portal?
And position coaches too, you know, because sometimes they don't get along with position coaches. So they're like, I got to get out of here. And then now that it's known that that person wants to get out of there, how does that position coach handle that player for the few weeks as they get ready for a bowl game?
Well, and Kenny Dillingham can do no wrong, apparently. You know, it's if that was coming out of the mouths of, oh, I don't know, Brent Brennan, my guess is the attitude toward that would probably be a little bit different. You know, it's tough. And football, I guess, is no different than any other sport. You know, when you're winning, you know, you're revolutionary and you've changed the game and you have a new leadership model, right? And then when the new leadership model goes south, you know, you're a bum again and you start over. And, you know, we've seen that at places like ASU.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a strange new world. I don't love it. I think everybody should be allowed to transfer once and play right away. I think that all NIL money should be public. I think we should know what everybody's making. To me, that, again, you talk about expectations, right? The Oakland Athletics don't enter every baseball season, or the, what are they? Sacramento Athletics.
Yeah.
The Sacramento Athletics, the former Oakland Athletics, or the Tampa Bay Rays, don't enter every baseball season reasonably expecting to win a World Series, because if you look at their payroll, they're last or second to last, right? It's hard to compete with the Yankees when you're the Tampa Bay Rays. I think that there are fan bases, and I don't know that Arizona is one of them, but maybe there are fan bases that expect their teams to compete for championships every year. If they only knew how much money the other guy was spending on NIL as opposed to their schools, their expectations would change, wouldn't they?
So let me ask you like a media, ask you guys a media related question here. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's just take Luke Weisong, for example. Luke Weisong is a wide receiver from New Mexico mm-hmm. who is transferring to Arizona. He had a great game against the Wildcats this year. Let's say that he was made available next week for an introductory press conference. Mm-hmm. Could you ask him, how much money did Arizona pay you? What is your NIL deal? Could we ask that question? It seems like no one ever asked that question. It's sort of like the forbidden fruit. It's taboo. But mm-hmm. I feel like we're almost to the point where it would be a perfectly reasonable and acceptable media query. What do you guys think?
I agree. If Juan Soto can talk about you, like, by the way, it's only taken me like 20 minutes to just start talking baseball. Sorry, guys. But if Juan Soto can say he signed with the Mets because the Mets gave him the most money and the goal was to get the most money, right? Don't you think that there are college athletes that think that way too? Maybe I would think that way. Maybe you would think that way. It's human nature. You know,
yeah.
Your salary is a reflection of what your bosses think of you. Right. To me that would make total sense. It just would. And yeah, I don't know.
It's not going to happen.
No,
I'm not. Are you going to ask that question at a Luke Weisong press conference, Justin? Maybe off to the side, like one-on-one. Like, I don't think it's going to happen. We have asked questions like, how much did NIL play into your decision? And then they always say, oh, really not that much. You know, it was really about, you know, family and feeling like a good fit and a home and all that.
You know, all that. Every recruit says the same thing. You know, from the second I got on campus, it just felt like family. The coaches were great. They're like family to me. My mom and dad thought it was great, et cetera, et cetera.
Until they're not.
Well, mm-hmm. until 9 months later when they find a new family somewhere else. Can I offer a counterpoint to all of this, even as I say I hate this new world? It is mildly surprising to me that the teams that were superpowers before you could legally pay players are still the superpowers now. Who sort of in this new world is all of a sudden a real player? Is it SMU?
That's one example. That's I'd say Miami. Miami is kind of back, okay. right? Because okay. they have money. But I don't know what the best way to put this is, but there are programs that have risen up mm-hmm. thanks to the way things are. Like Indiana is Colorado. An example. Like Colorado is another example. SMU is a great example. They're not even getting TV money, but they have so many rich donors and fans that they can basically, you know, buy a program.
Texas
Tech is like going crazy in the portal right now. I mean, who's Texas Tech? Texas Tech is Arizona-esque, basically, right?
Arizona in a dry
county. But they have boosters and donors who care and are passionate about football. And Arizona doesn't have those kind of people in their corner. Like TCU right now, like I've heard that their NIL collective is booming. And that's how they were able to get Terry Shelton to flip from Arizona and stay home at TCU. Like, I think we're going to see here in the next few years, the entire state of Texas, like every single school, no matter what conference they're in, it's going to be booming because of the amount of money that's being poured in from boosters.
But we look at the schools that are competing for national championships. I will argue to you that list of schools hasn't changed, right? It's Ohio State, Michigan, SC, Washington, Oregon, you know, on to Texas, Oklahoma, Georgia, to a certain extent.
Penn State, yeah.
Right, Penn State. A cynic would look at that and go, well, yeah, it's because these guys have always been paying players, right? Like, the idea that you can now legally pay players doesn't really change the calculus there. Or at least they were always offering benefits that would not be available at lesser schools. I don't know that that's 1,000% true, but, you know, it would be super interesting. Here's just a total hypothetical. The richest school athletically in Arizona just might be Grand Canyon. Okay. Privately owned, or their stock, you know, it's shareholders own it, right? When they do well in sports, the stock goes up, right? What is keeping a place like Grand Canyon from starting its own football program, joining, say, the Pac-12 in this new world? hiring a big name. Let's say Dabo Swinney, right? A religious guy. Hold on. Religious school. What is keeping Grand Canyon from throwing $30 million a year at a football program and just saying, hey, in this new world, we've decided that we're going to buy visibility. We are going to buy legitimacy. That's what Grand Canyon's done with basketball to a lesser extent, right? Nobody knew who they were. Lev, you and I watched them play midweek series against Arizona in baseball forever, but nobody knew where Grand Canyon was.
Beat them in the NCAA tournament last year.
Yeah, beat them in the NCAA
tournament. In Tucson, tournament. Yeah.
Right. Like, I know Chad Curtis went there, but I'm a dork like that. Like
Russ Pennell.
Right, yeah, but it's like, you know, it's that, right? What is keeping a college that is not on anybody's radar from just getting some rich guys in a room saying, here's $50 million and we're going to do this? I would like to think that actually being great at sports requires something more than rich guys deciding to write a check, but maybe not. Maybe this is the world we're in now, where what your history, what your traditions and legacy are and all that stuff doesn't matter if you have more money than the other guy.
Isn't this what Sacramento State is also kind of trying to do?
Sacramento State's trying to get into the Pac-12. Yeah. Sacramento State thinks that if it can throw more money into its football program, and again, you know, it's a separate podcast, guys, but, you know, the new Pac-12 isn't the old Pac-12. You know, SC's not walking through that door. I think Sacramento State sees an opportunity. You know, it's a major city on the West Coast. They've played sort of small college football and been fine. They had, what's his name? Remember Bo Baldwin?
Yeah.
Remember when Kenny Dillingham fired both his coordinators after 1 year and then they were good after that? Okay. Anyway, Kenny Dillingham wasn't a rock star from the day he showed up. They're thinking, hey, what if we throw money into this? When you saw the Michael Vick story yesterday, right, that he reportedly had talked to them, I'm not sure that there's a ton of truth to it. But I guarantee you that Sacramento State was thrilled that somebody out there was talking about Sacramento State football.
If there's a Fresno State, why can't there be a Sacramento
State? Why can't there be a Sacramento State? And, you know, I guarantee you nobody east of Colorado knew that Sacramento State played football until Michael Vick was linked to their coaching job, right? You know, Cam Scataboo and Michael Vick have done more for Sacramento State football in the last 6 months than anybody ever.
So the toothpaste is not going to be put back in the tube.
Right.
If they try to just implement rules to restrict movement, they're going to lose in the courts.
Right.
So what is the quote unquote solution to this quote unquote problem? The only way
salary cap
is salary some cap. Sort of collective bargaining agreement, salary cap, contracts, the complete professionalization of major college sports, where they are employees, mm-hmm. and they are bound to their school for mm-hmm. a certain number of years, and they can't just leave whenever they want or as many times as they want, and it would be bargained, right, between representatives from both sides. Mm-hmm. I actually think it would be advantageous for management, quote unquote, to do this. Mm-hmm. Like, I think they'd have the upper hand. Mm-hmm. That it, like, the athletes are in a great position right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have freedom of movement. They've got NIL up the wazoo. They're going to get revenue sharing, mm-hmm. right? So I don't know if that's ever going to happen. I think in your sort of like, what's it going to look like 5 or 10 years from now? It's mm-hmm. conceivable that something like that will happen. It might be the only way to solve problems like, you know, transferring every single year, NIL run amok, mm-hmm. The schedule, which we've talked about a lot, Justin, that like everything just sort of, it's just big pile, this multi-car pileup in mm-hmm. December, like all this stuff going on at the same time, no real off season. It could happen.
Yeah.
And a lot of people aren't going to like it. They're going to be turned off by it, but at the end of the day, you know, they love their Wildcats no matter who they are. And if there was something in place that would encourage mm-hmm. student athletes to stick around longer than they currently are, you might regain some of those like emotional attachments that are sometimes being lost with the way the world is now.
Well, and I also think it along those lines, Lev, it keeps a guy like Jacob Manu in place at Arizona, like Gunnar Maldonado. I think, you know, Trayden Stukes is going to have a stint in the NFL, but I'm not confident guys like Manu and Gunnar Maldonado will. And right now, if you think about it from their perspective, they're like, okay, I got one more year left of college football. I can enter my name in the portal and just see what's around. If there's a team that's willing to give me, let's say, $500,000 and Arizona can't compete with that, knowing that this is probably the last time that I could make legitimate money playing football, then I got to do the best for me in this 1 year window. And I think that CBA, you can avoid situations like that.
Right. That might be more money than I made in my 20s, by the way. Right. I mean, if somebody wants to give you $500,000 at his age, when you know that the NFL is probably not in his future, you take that. I think that it's a twofold solution. And I'm not sure it's all that complicated, to be honest with you. I think number one is licensing. These football programs, and I guess men's basketball programs, should become club teams. One of the prerequisites of being on the club is you got to be a full-time student. You essentially pay, say the U of A club football team pays the U of A for use of the facilities, pays the U of A for use of helmets, helmet stickers, helmet logos, the right to be called the Arizona Wildcats, okay? That way, by making it a club team, you take the Title IX implications out of it. And I think that Title IX, especially when it comes to football, is a giant problem here. You know, it's football needs to be its own entity, I think. So, okay, you break them out there. That's step one. Step two is you treat it like soccer. If you say have Jacob Manu and Jacob Manu says, I want to go to the University of Texas and the University of Texas is going to give me $500,000 to play one season there. If you're Arizona, you say, hey, that's fantastic. The rules dictate that the University of Arizona gets 10% or 20%.
Transfer fee.
And so all of a sudden, instead of fooling ourselves that everybody has a chance to win a national championship every year and everybody ends up disappointed, we treat this like it is, which is feeder programs for bigger schools. And so, you know, the guy at San Diego State wants to transfer to Arizona. Arizona's got to give San Diego State 50 grand. And San Diego State is thrilled because that 50 grand keeps the lights on, right? If a kid from Texas or, you know, Texas wants to take Jacob Manu, Arizona maybe gets 100 grand, right? And maybe you sign contracts. I'm not sure you should be able to trade players because this is nominally an educational endeavor. But I think you sign guys to five-year deals when they commit to you. You announce how much money they're getting every year. And then if another team wants to come buy your best player off of you and the kid wants to go, and the school says yes, you cut a deal, and the school gets a percentage.
Great idea. Here's what Arizona fans don't want to hear. They don't want to hear that they're not in the Premier League, no. To extend your soccer metaphor, when it comes to football.
It's true.
And I don't know how many teams are in the Premier League. There have been a lot of talk about a college football super league of some sort. Mm-hmm. Where's the cutoff? If it's 70 teams, they're probably good. If it's 60 teams, they're probably good. If it's 40 teams, 32 teams, you know, and then maybe we, you know, there's been talk too about doing some sort of relegation and promotion system, which I think would be a lot of fun, mm-hmm. Honestly, and exciting for those teams at the bottom to kind of play their way into, you know, the upper reaches. But that transfer fee idea is fantastic. That is a great idea. This is why we have people. This is why we have Ryan on the podcast. He's got really good ideas.
Try telling a room full of football coaches that the way to save their sport is to follow the European soccer model and see how quickly they throw you out of that room. I think it's true. I think that at some point you need to incentivize, like, what good does it do a school? And again, I'm only saying this because we cover them here. A school like San Diego State, you identify a kid, you bring him in, you develop him. He gets better on your dime, only for him to go, I'm out because I'm getting more money. I think that the schools that develop players should be able to wet their beaks a little if that player becomes so good that he can go get six or seven figures somewhere else. And, you know, imagine how that would revolutionize something like Arizona basketball, right? Arizona basketball, rather than paying into an NIL collective, let's say you just donate money to the school. And then the school every year has, $20 million to go buy players if they want to. You could go get the best player at St. Mary's. You could go get the best player at, Utah State or whatever it is. You know, that to me is sort of a less, it doesn't make me feel as dirty as the NIL sort of process does, right? Because yeah. The departing player schools are sort of active partners in this conversation, as opposed to you wake up one morning and a kid walks in the coach's door and says, "Hey, I'm going," you know, Jacob Manu probably, right? Jacob Manu walking in and going, "I'm going to transfer." To me, that's, I don't know. That's more fair. I don't know if it's fair, but it's more fair than the current system.
So you invest a ton of time, resources, money, energy, effort into recruiting these kids, right? Some of which you can't even really place a monetary value on.
Right.
And then you run the risk of losing them after a year or two. So it does make sense that there should be something that comes back your way. I also think that giving these huge NIL packages to high school recruits who've never taken a snap in college, like, you're kind of really getting off message when you do that. And one other thing I will add to this conversation is a colleague of ours, Brian Peterson over at AZ Desert Swarm. He believes you should never redshirt a player anymore because all you're doing is training them for somebody else.
It's a great point.
It's a great point too. I don't know if we will ever get to the point where like colleges are actually affiliated with one another. Like, for example, let's just say South Alabama and Alabama. Like South Alabama is like Alabama's AAA team. And they have like, they will place players at South Alabama to start out with in their careers. And then they're like, you know, they kind of get promoted to Alabama.
That would make sense. Yeah.
But it would further create, it would further classify the teams. And people, you know, they don't want to hear that in a lot of cases.
They want to feel like they have a chance.
Yeah.
But, you know, like it, in Europe, at least with soccer teams, there are whole franchises whose sort of reason for being is they pay their bills by developing players and then selling them somewhere. And they get a cut, and that cut keeps the lights on, right? You look in American sports, something like baseball, which is probably the most have and have not sport of the major American sports right now, right? The Tampa Bay Rays and the Oakland A's, they scout and develop guys and then trade them for more guys who they can develop. You know, it's not
stinks a fair, for their, it stinks for their fans,
right? It's not a fair system, by the way, hold on. It doesn't stink for fans of say Arizona football. Like this football system stinks for fans too. It's all terrible. At least they're honest about it in some of these other leagues, you know? And that's what's unfortunate too. Football is so all about recruiting that no coach will ever admit that he's a feeder program for bigger schools, right? Every place is amazing. There's no place like fill in the blank, right? You know, Utah State, New Mexico, right? Everybody tells everybody that their program's the best. Well, let's be realistic a little bit. Like, let's be, hey, you want to, I know we're your best offer. Come here. And maybe in 2 years, you can go make 150 grand playing at Arizona. Like, I think that's smart. And it's honest.
What happens if someone goes from a bigger school to a smaller school? How would the transfer fee kind of thing work?
That's a great point. I don't know. You know, maybe those smaller schools just use a higher percentage of their budget to go get somebody, right? If you're New Mexico and you have, say, $2 million to spend, you know, maybe you can go buy the backup quarterback for half of, or buy Alabama's backup quarterback, you know, for half of what Alabama gave them, right? Maybe Alabama cuts its losses. Maybe they go, well, we don't really want this guy around. Or maybe you can, maybe we'll see a world where guys get sort of bought out and released like we see in the pros, right? Hey, we're going to, you know, for half of what we owe you, we're just going to set you free. It's all gross. Talking about this is all gross.
But gross
and what's going on.
Yeah, I like the fact that it would be more transparent.
Yes.
In this world versus the way it is now, where we all know that it's happening, but no one is really willing to talk about it. I guess some agencies are kind of because they want to make themselves look good, and that's another whole you know, a piece of this thing is the involvement of agents. Now you see all these announcements on Twitter, like so-and-so is visiting a school, his agency announced, like, you know, I would say 90% of the players whose names appear in these tweets, no one has ever heard of them aside from the fans of the school where they're currently playing.
Yeah.
Or played last year.
That's a great point.
But they're kind of getting that pop and they're getting that second round of attention.
Yeah.
You know, which talk about human nature. I mean, we all love attention, right?
Kids love being recruited. Most kids love being recruited, right? We have reached a world now where a kid is now being recruited every year from the time he's 15 till the time he's 22. And
it's crazy.
That's not money. Maybe it's not a kid with a handout, but it's probably a kid who likes feeling the love from people, right? Who likes being told he's great. I'm not sure that's a great way to raise a young man, but this is the world, you know?
Yeah. All right. Before we get to our bowl picks, Ryan, just,
Are you really going to make me make bowl picks in a public forum, Justin? My God. it's just going to be a disaster, but go ahead.
Well, we already posted our picks, so maybe we should just go on Tucson.com and find all of our picks there. I just want to talk about the Pop-Tarts Bowl. It was such a great trophy.
Please do.
Go ahead. See the new trophy?
No, I'm just kidding. I just wanted to talk about the trophy. That's the only bowl game that matters, in my opinion. And the Arizona Bowl, but I love that Pop-Tarts Bowl trophy. It is ascended on my list of all-time favorite trophies.
It's amazing.
It is a functioning toaster.
And it's a functioning toaster.
Yeah, too. GE, yeah, so right? Was it General Electric who partnered with them? How long before you're going to be able to smoke something out of the Snoop and Dre Arizona Bowl trophy?
That's
my question.
Well, they finally got an alcohol brand to sponsor a bowl game for the first time ever.
That's true.
So maybe soon. Maybe it's right around the corner. But
the trophy, if I recall correctly, is sort of it's a glass football, right? Is it glass?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Or a hand blown football.
And the artist who made them made like 12 of them. Mm-hmm. So they just have a storage unit with all the Arizona Bowl trophies. And I think now they're getting down to the last few because the guy retired.
Right.
So now they're like, we don't have any more. Like, this is it. So yeah, maybe the next Arizona Bowl they'll have it.
This is not my scene at all, but I think that if you gave Snoop Dogg a glass cylindrical shaped thing, he could probably turn it into something. Yeah.
Yeah. But I wanted to get your perspective.
Justin is just real quick. A Big 12 Bowl bonanza update. Justin is two games behind me in the against the spread for the season. Our other former sports editor, Brett Farah, is three games behind me. We did a blind draw for the picks this time, and there was no like discussion. Usually, like, I'll introduce the game on the pod, I'll talk about it, I'll make a pick, and Justin, then he can think about it or whatever. And Justin did a pretty good job unknowingly of kind of going against the grain on several of these games, giving himself a chance to possibly catch up. For example, he took BYU over Colorado in the Alamo Bowl. He took Arkansas over Texas Tech, and I think that's the Liberty Bowl.
Yeah.
He took West Virginia over Memphis in the game that's tonight, which is, you know, I was kind of like, if a team doesn't have a coach, that I'm going to go against that team. That's the Frisco Bowl, by the way. So we'll see what happens. I've always find it very difficult to predict the outcomes of bowl games because who's invested in it? Who's lost a bunch of players? Who cares about being there? Who wants to be there?
Yeah.
You know, these are all a lot of the things that go into it beyond just stats or X's and O's.
A very successful Big 12 football coach told me once that you could pick bowl games with stunning accuracy once you figure out who actually wants to be there. And you know, when I try to make bowl picks, you think about that a little bit. I think of New Mexico State at the Arizona Bowl. Right? It was the best football day they'd had in 50 years. They wanted to be there. The other guys had no hope, right? It was Wyoming or somebody, right? It's like, once you can figure out who's motivated, my guess is the school that just replaced its coach probably isn't so motivated. Once you figure out who's motivated, I think that the picks are easier to make. But just
speaking of that New Mexico State Arizona Bowl, I want to say the number is 4 walk-offs in 9 of these games. Or 8 of these games? I think this upcoming one is the ninth one. Incredible. Like, it's incredible. No, I think it's the 10th year, but the ninth game. This
year. Oh, is it? Okay.
Because they, we missed 2020.
Yeah.
But it's sort of like those games have been kind of like NFL games where it's really not a great game for about 55 minutes, but it's close at the end and exciting and dramatic. Well, and the Arizona Bulls had a great run in that regard.
That was one of my favorite sports days of the year in Tucson was the Arizona Bowl. And it was a combination of things. Number one, there's no such thing as a bad bowl game. Trust me, I've been to a lot of them. I've been to a lot of the quote unquote bad bowl games, and they're all great. I've been to a Poinsettia Bowl, guys. I've been to multiple New Mexico Bowls. But there's no such thing as a bad bowl. Number two, it's fun from a journalist perspective to watch a game on the sidelines that you don't have anything invested in, really. Like, it's just fun, and yeah. Everybody's happy to be there. It's kind of a celebration. You know, even the teams that lose, you know, there's not a lot of crying when you lose a bowl game. And, you know, I think that kind of the charm of the Arizona Bowl is it's not impactful when it comes to the college football playoff, right? This doesn't sort of make or break somebody's life. It's fun. And I'm sure this year's Arizona Bowl is going to be just as good as the last ones. And really fun. It's one of the days every year where I'm like, oh man, you know, it's one of my favorite days.
I've been to every single one of them, and we'll make it 100% here coming up. Mm-hmm. The very first game that I covered for the Arizona Daily Star was the New Mexico Bowl. It was the week that I was hired. Ryan and I were having discussions in the fall of 2015 after our colleague Daniel Burke decided to become a media relations person for the U of A, and he's now at Kansas, and was able to see Daniel when we visited there recently, and it was pretty awesome. That's his alma mater, and he gave us a tour of the Allen Fieldhouse. But anyway, so my first week on the job, first day on the job, I went out to U of A football practice, wrote a story, like orientation in the morning, practice in the afternoon, hit the ground running. And I think the next day or maybe 2 days later, got in a car with Zach Rosenblatt, drove up to Phoenix, got on a flight to Albuquerque, mm-hmm. Covered the New Mexico Bowl. Ryan actually joined us.
I did.
Later on, and we were, you know, mm-hmm. like going to pick up Ryan and drive him over to the game, and he was nowhere to be found. What happened? I think he set
slept
his
through
alarm.
My alarm. It's happened in my entire life twice.
I think I thought you. Wow. I thought it was that you set it the wrong time.
I set it for like PM instead of AM.
Yeah.
It's the old, the Jean-Paul on Seinfeld, right? It's the AM instead of the PM. And then the alarm clock had the second knob.
He did make it on time.
I made it on time.
Covered the New Mexico Bowl.
I wrote a story about Will Parks that day because he went up against his brother. His brother caught a touchdown. And it's so funny. My story, every once in a while, stuff sticks out. I wrote a story that day essentially being like, if this is the last game Will Parks ever plays, he really left it all out on the field. Because it was my impression and understanding that while he was a very good college player, probably wasn't a pro. And Will Parks decided to then go play like 7 years in the NFL. So I wrote the whole like, if this is it, well, it wasn't it. It wasn't it for like another 7 years.
Had a bigger and longer pro career than Scooby Wright.
Yeah,
who was the star of that team. He missed most of the season. He came back for the New Mexico Bowl, had a huge game in the New Mexico Bowl.
Declared on the field,
declared that he was going to enter the NFL draft, and he ended up being like fourth from the last pick or something. It was one of those things where he just wasn't like, didn't have the NFL build, you know, like, you know, he wasn't really a space linebacker, but he kind of had the size of a space linebacker. It wasn't really big enough to be a pass rusher. Just one of those guys who was a tremendous college player. Who never made it to the pros. But to bring things full circle, I wonder if Rich Rod might reach out to Scooby and see if he wants to join the staff.
Makes sense.
Over there at West Virginia.
Yeah.
Get the gang back together again, like we're doing right here.
Heck yeah, man. Ryan, before we get out of here, just thoughts on, from afar, the Arizona Daily Star sports leadership. Yeah, Brett Farah as your successor, and now we got Alexis Wiechea.
Yeah, it's great. I've known Alexis a very long time. When I first started at the Star, it was like 2004 or 2005. Alexis was one of our summer interns. She went, you know, a Tucson native, went to high school there, went to one of the state's other colleges, not the U of A, but came back during the summer and worked in sports. And you could tell then that she had a really bright future in this business. And so happy again. It, you know, Brett is a friend. I've known Brett a very long time. Was disappointed to see Brett leave just because I know how well you guys all got along and the great work that he did with you guys.
Yep.
But happy, you know, if it can't be Brett, the fact that it's Alexis, I think is great for you guys. And, you know, that's one of the wonderful things about the Star. And I try not to take that for granted, is just, there are so many good and talented people there. And to have, you know, obviously it starts with you guys and Bruce and Greg and PJ and the whole group. And, you know, we have a new addition to this year, which is great, doing community sports, which is fantastic. Elvia. And to see Alexis take over, she's super talented. And you guys, if you don't love her already, you're going to love working for her. She's a really dogged, smart journalist and a really good human being. And again, if you hire good human beings, you can't go wrong almost always.
Even though Ryan himself went into the transfer portal and went to another paper, to give you an idea of how invested he is still in the Arizona Daily Star, whenever we talk on the phone, he still says we.
Still says we.
You know, still says we, still says us. So this place means a lot to him. Yeah, and it means a lot to us to have been able to bring you on for our 500th episode. Extremely fun. You know, who knows? Maybe another 500 episodes from now, God willing, we'll be able to do this again.
Yes, absolutely. 1,000. That'd be fun. Do like a thing. Like there could be a gala. What do you think?
A gala. No,
a gala. Maybe just like.
I mean, like maybe we could do, I don't know, maybe we could do better than Ryan as a guest. I'm not sure. By that point, maybe we'll be a little more established in the world out there. But I can't imagine anyone who would be a more fun guest, who has a greater like institutional knowledge of Tucson, U of A sports, Arizona Daily Star, all those things.
Well, thank you guys. I wore my Tucson Sidewinders hat specifically for this occasion. Thrilled to be on here. And, you know, again, I've gone from being sort of involved day to day to just being a reader and a listener. And I can't tell you how great it is to wake up in the morning and read what you guys write, and how, even though I'm so far away, I still feel so connected. And it's because of the Star. It's because of you guys. And, you know, I don't feel like I'm 400 miles away when I'm reading about, you know, the UCLA basketball game or whatever. You know, I feel like I'm right there with you guys. So thank you for continuing to do what you do. And again, here's to another 500.
Hell yeah, man. 500th episode of the Wildcast podcast, now officially in the books. Check out all of our episodes on the Apple Podcast app, also Spotify, Tucson.com. That's where you can find the video version of this podcast. And as always, subscribe, rate, and comment the Wildcast podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. Ryan, thank you once again, my friend. Happy holidays.
All right. Have a good one.
All right. Here's to another 500. Thank you guys for listening.